Welcome to the Performance Health Podcast. My name is Tim Caron. Today we're going to be talking about building leverage. The past 2 weeks we've been talking about working with coaches, working with support staff. Now we're going to talk about building leverage within an athletic department. This is an important topic, one that I think is often neglected and overlooked. If you like what we're talking about today, go to phpodcast.com, get yourself a copy of How to Become a Strength Coach. I spent a lot of time on this topic, specifically in that book, because I think it's important, and I do think there is a very, very much a lack of resources out there discussing that, at least through the lens or the optics for someone that's not going to have a lot of leverage or not a lot of opportunity to get more. And I've been personally in situations where I regret not being more savvy in this area, and I hope to parlay that information to the next person to improve their chances of getting more compensation and more responsibility within their athletic department. If you like what you hear, please leave a review, share with friends, and all that good stuff. Thank you, guys. Let's talk about building leverage within the athletic department.
This episode, we're going to talk about leverage. Corey's not going to be here this week. He's got a lot of stuff going on, so I want to make sure I get this out to you guys. With leverage, the most important thing to think about is doing it in a way that you feel is authentic and you feel is in line with your values and your ethos. Leverage has an association with some sort of transactional relationship with the people around you, right? We're leveraging stuff all the time, whether we know it or not. Leverage stuff with my wife, leverage stuff with my children, leverage stuff with my parents, leverage all those things. Like, you go buy a car, you're leverage determines how much value you're going to get. I mean, they have a price point in their mind, and if you're willing to walk away, and if you say, if you can cut an extra $1,000 off right now, I will purchase right now. All that stuff, right? It's constantly battling this notion of leverage and what value can you get in that situation from the person or the entity that you're working with, right? So a really important line will be this idea of how do you negotiate for more money, maybe at the initiation of when you start working somewhere or when you get to a critical juncture in your career. You know, what value do you have to that organization determines whether you get that, right? So I talk a lot about this and how to become a strength coach, but this entry point. So a lot of times we disconnect from the person interviewing us or hiring us is a human, and they have emotions and they have ego and they have pride, but they've also getting momentum going with potentially you're the person, right? So let's say that you get a phone interview. There is minimal investment financially, personally, time into that person. So negotiating at that point of, hey, I want more money in order to go there, is just bad timing because you have less leverage. Now you start making your way through, you get to a second, third round. Maybe it's in person, maybe it's a follow-up interview on the phone. Now you got some touch points. They've shown an interest in you. They've shown some sort of maybe potential. They can see themselves working with you. They can see themselves connecting with you and collaborating with you and getting a valuable partnership towards the development of your teams and athletes. A lot of times too, there's this momentum in the direction of, okay, this person has a very profound level of skill and knowledge in this area, or their network has a certain level of exposure to things that I want to learn more about or stuff that I think is interesting. Maybe there's a level of, man, I've just had a bad string of coaches who work with me who are very, very reliant on me to do everything. And I want someone to succeed a lot of the stuff that I'm required to do. And I'm not trying to pawn off the work that I don't want to do, but having a vision of someone who's going to make my life better and allow me to focus on other things is nice, right? We're all human. And the detachment from the person that you're interviewing with the fact that they're human and they have wants and needs and they have things in their life that they want to be better, I think oftentimes we missed out in negotiation. Now, it's not something you can manipulate to getting more money and taking advantage of the situation. That's not what I want to come across and say here. But you have to look at it. If they get to a second and third round of interviews, you think about it from the time invested, multiple hours, right? Like whether a phone interview took an hour in-person interview took 3-4 days, maybe a follow-up interview was an hour. That's like just face-to-face with you. That doesn't count the hours of resume reviewing, talking with HR, talking with the staff, talking and debriefing with the staff after the interview. And then maybe you've gotten like some inertia going of like, this is the guy or girl. This is going to be the person that's going to make this athletic department better. And you got on a hill and they're doing a sports coach. Like, I don't know. I don't really resonate with them. Doesn't really check the boxes what I'm looking for. But if you believe them, okay, we'll throw you this bone. So now I have a lot of sunk cost. I have a lot of inertia, of time, energy. I have this vision building out my hypotheticals about like, okay, this person is going to be responsible for this, this, and this. And then you get to that offer, right? Like, well, here's what we're paying. Really want you to take it. And I think at that point, we miss a golden opportunity. Because here's something that I think is very difficult about strength and conditioning. And this is something that we're compared to quite a bit, which I think is a mistake, personally. Your value on the day you're hired is a fraction of what you're going to be worth in the future. Think about the time, energy you're going to commit to yourself after you get hired, right? So the expectation is you got an undergrad, you got a master's degree, you got a certain level of experience, you got certain certifications. That is your value, right? So we're getting some sort of level of compensation based off of previous experience, tenure, and knowledge. And then we start to make our way into that job. And the version of myself improves. And I compound my knowledge. I compound my experience. I compound my ability to provide more to that athletic department or that staff. My value should go up in concert with that, right? So normally, if I'm a teacher or if I'm a doctor, if I start to extend myself and learn new skills, my value therefore increases. We see this a lot in fitness as well, right? A lot of big box gyms that pay personal trainers is prorated based off their level of certification or experience. And that is not in line with the team sector. In fact, the only way you're probably going to get more is if another school shows interest in you, which we'll talk about leverage here when you're working there. But in that window, when you get hired, that is your only opportunity to get more money, at least in the short term. Regardless of whether you improve your education, right? So let's say that you get a job straight out of undergrad and then you get a master's degree 2-3 years later, you don't get a pay bump. You won't. They won't even pay for your master's more times than not, because that looks as supplemental and ancillary towards what your primary job is, unnecessary and not of value. And one of the things I talk a lot about within how to become a strength coach is this idea that a master's degree has become a qualifier as opposed to a developmental tool, right? That we're not using master's degree to bring more value to a school. We're using a master's degree to put myself in a higher echelon of coaches or higher caliber of coaches based off of the investment time and energy it took myself to educate myself. We just make a list smaller and allow for entities to be more selective. In reality, that's you extending your base level of knowledge in order to be a competent, qualified strength and conditioning coach. And that now is therefore the responsibility of the school or the organization you work with to compensate you or pay you for that increased level of value you're bringing to the athletic department. But that's the clearest sign of if you were ever going to negotiate and leverage something more in a moment, that expectation that you're probably not going to get more until you have another offer from another school or another opportunity or the willingness to walk and knowing that it's going to create a vacuum effect, or the alternative is eventually you're going to be part of a staff that gets fired and you're out the door. So you've gone through 3 lines of interview and you've get into a position where you now are in a small list of candidates and they're evaluating pros and cons. One of the first things that we're always going to talk about when we're hiring someone is, would they be willing to leave their current situation and move here, right? What are the dynamics? Do they have a family? What will be the moving cost? Do they need to buy a home? There's a lot of variables associated with someone who's married with kids and the potential for longevity and stability in my athletic department versus that person who's on their upward tick, no real family engagements or things that they're tied down to. They're going to be more available to you immediately. So if I'm looking at this for a person of like, I've been here for 3-5 years, I want a staff member that's going to be with me for the next foreseeable future. I know it's going to cost a little bit more to get that person to come here, but also association with that, they're going to have benefits, they're going to have retirement, they're going to have moving costs, they're going to have to buy a home, they're going to have to get their kids in school, so they probably have to leave out work a lot more, they have doctor's appointments, but I know I have a longer run with that person. Now, for that person that's saying, hey, I'm married with kids and I want to be here for a while, you think you're going to get more money in any other period than that first period right there? Probably not. Because the inertia you have to create to leave somewhere is much more than that single person who got everything in their duffel bag can leave at a beck and notice. It's that fear of, okay, well, I want someone that's going to be here and that's going to cost a little bit more money versus the other person of, hey, I'm willing to move wherever I want. I want to take this job. And let's agree that this is a short-term solution for both of us, for us, me to get something else and you to have someone to come in here, basically be a plug and play, help you out and get to the next gig. Now, who's going to have a little bit more leverage in that situation? Really depends. You know that you got through 3 lines of interview. Maybe that a lot of people turned down the job. That could have happened. Maybe that they have a very high revolving door and that job is constantly in turnover and they don't really value it. Maybe that person is just an entity that just fits in and doesn't really matter your skill. And what I mean by all this stuff is you have to be able to read the room when you're going to go, well, I want a little bit more money. It's going to take a little bit more. It's going to take a little bit more, maybe things that make it sweeter, right? I need a car. I need a cell phone. I need bonuses. I need a certain annual. I want my own office. All these things are on the table. And it just depends on what you value, right? And a lot of times it's, can you see down the road and find, let's say, a Power 5 school that's very bureaucratic and it's going to have a lot of power dynamics, and you position yourself as a person that is interchangeable, right? So let's say that you find some sort of way that you are employed by the athletic department or sports medicine, or maybe you're have a particular skill set and you're employed by strength and conditioning, but you become indispensable because of your accessibility, knowledge, and your value that you bring to the department. Ton of leverage. And where does that go into? All right, well, I want this, this, and this. And you have to ask yourself before you ask or entertain the idea of, can I squeeze this for more? What leverage do you have? And that becomes very difficult, I think, for most strength and conditioning coaches. Most of us have this notion of being thankful for what we get, being just appreciative for the opportunity. Don't want to disrupt or upset the people that gave us an opportunity. But on the other end, the person that was interviewing you went to bat for it, right? And if they're on that final leg and really want you to come, that becomes a very interesting place to be. And one of the other areas, and you'll find this on the back end, it's the constant looking around to find more to leverage your current place, right? There's a notion in business that if you get an opportunity to leave somewhere for more money or higher responsibility, they should absolutely go. Because if you're going to leverage that for the current place and you're able to get that you're always going to be resented that you aren't more valuable. You just were able to squeeze, based off a circumstance, more out of that for you. That they were paying you a certain amount to do a certain job. Now, because someone else thought you were worthy because of something that you positioned yourself to get or were lobbying hard to get, now all of a sudden you have more compensation. In theory, you probably were undercompensated based off the job you're doing and you're positioning yourself to get more from that and shouldn't be perceived as all that negative, but it's going to be some sort of resentment often, right? So you're playing two different ends of the game here. Like, you're looking at the end of, I got another opportunity to go to another school. Say it's a no-brainer, but they come back and fight to keep you. That's great. Will it be as symbiotic of a relationship with that staff that you were paid something before? Maybe you bypass someone that's been there longer or potentially is doing more, but considering you had other opportunities, was able to get more money versus just taking the job and just trying to bounce around and keep moving up till you get to a certain financial bracket or positional bracket that you feel is going to give you some, all right, I want to be here. I'm committed to this place. But at opening window, and that strength coach that went to bat for you, that convinced an athletic department, admin, coaches, rest of the strength and conditioning staff, sports medicine, all the entities that are going to be directly influenced by this, that this is the person that we need to hire. And you say, well, I thought about it. It'd take me a lot to leave. I really want to make more money. Chances of you getting it are going to be a lot higher than that after that first phone interview. And then after that, you go over there, start working. Look, they're just not going to walk in and say, hey, we really like the job you're doing. We're going to give you more money. Because you've accepted that's your tolerable amount that you'd be paid. But if you don't have leverage, then you're not going to be able to get that. And that takes skill, that takes awareness, that takes knowledge at doing the work, you know, finding the power brokers in any athletic department, finding the backstory of why this position's open and who else got interviewed and what was their asking price, so you can start to set the bar a little bit higher. And if you don't feel comfortable asking for that or asking for more, then you get the job and you feel like you're underpaid based off the job that you're doing. And then it starts to lead in the other end of it. So you have now two ends of the story, right? You have the front end, where front end positional leverage, back end. You're shopping yourself around, you're poking tires, you're looking at football scoop, you're looking at certain chatwares, you're starting to get in the rumor mill. Basically just trying to like be nosy, but self-serving interest. We all know it. I mean, everyone who's saying that they are just love the show and really like to just get into the drama and the soap opera of strength conditioning transition, or any coaching for that matter, there's some small level of, where do I fit in now? What is the domino effect and where do I fall on that domino? I mean, how am I going to position myself off of this? Right? Let's say that a coach leaves for another school and conference, and all of a sudden now everyone's aware of what their compensation is and not start to think about where you fit. Let's say it's another level of, that person leaves that school and they want to get someone in there that they think could replace them seamlessly, and they offer you. And you're like, oh, wow, okay, well, what do I do here? Do I go to the school and give them a chance to counter? Or do I go to that school, next school, and basically have the same job, same problems, but maybe paid potentially a little bit more? Or maybe you're just applying to every single job under the sun, hoping that someone will give you a sniff. And there's a level of, like, you're trying to attract another place to work to hopefully get more, regardless of if it's the current place you're working or the future place. And that's a tricky game. That is a game that becomes very, very, make sure you're not stepping too far away from first base, because you're going to get picked off. And if someone says you got another opportunity and they call your bluff, and you got to pick up and move, and it might actually not be as much as you want, or it might not be as guaranteed as you thought, then all of a sudden you're in a very vulnerable spot. I find that the trying to leverage other positions or other opportunities to get more where you're currently at is a very zero-sum game. I think that your best opportunity to leverage in terms of compensation is early, after you get the official job offer. Just from a strategy, I think it's a lot cleaner. I think it's a lot better from the, here's what I think I'm worth, and here's where I really want to set a precedent of, I want to be here, but I think there is a conversation around, if I'm going to be here, I want to be paid adequately based off of my skill, my talent, and my ability, both knowing that I'm probably going to have very little upward mobility or upward compensation opportunities here, unless I leave. And I don't want to play this carousel game of trying to get more from another school to stay where I'm currently at to make more money. I'd rather just get in the front end, knowing that I'm probably not going to have much more opportunity to squeeze out of that. So I'll get it here. And it's funny though, like, it gets in this weird dynamic of, the more someone's paid, the more they're valued, and the more that they're more likely to give them raises in the same period of time as someone's less paid, right? Someone making 30 to 40 is probably having little opportunity to make more money, because that becomes their stamp of their value, right? This is that person that comes to work every day and doesn't really ask for much and doesn't really bring much to the table, versus the perception of someone making 125, who's also an assistant, they're perceived to be more valuable and they tend to get more things, whether it's fair or not. So it becomes your actual obligation and priority to figure out, where am I falling in this interview structure and how do I leverage that? Now, I would be remiss to say that if we're exclusively talking about leverage for compensation, I think is a huge missed opportunity. One of the things that we've been talking about in the past two episodes is this inner communication in an athletic department between other strength and conditioning coaches, other sports medicine or support staff, or even sport coaches. And all of that has factors in how you're navigating and organizing your day. And one of the areas that I find about working with athletic departments, sport coaches, sports medicine, is that everybody has to collaborate and connect. And a lot of people might be doing more work than others. And one of the things that I think is so paramount, it's this: be willing to help when necessary, but don't get taken advantage. It's a very tricky thing, right? There is the, I'm helping someone, I'm getting, being gracious in this opportunity to support the rest of the staff, giving them things that I think will help them be able to do their job more effectively and better. And then that becomes the expectation. You just basically got leveraged, right? That dynamic. Now, I'm not trying to create this like dystopian picture of team setting where everyone's manipulative, everyone's out for themselves. And we have this dynamic of being out for your best interests exclusively and avoid getting taken advantage of, right? But I do think there is a lot of naive strength conditioning coaches that don't really value their time as much as they should. And you see burnout, you see work-life balance issues, you see, I wouldn't say that we've had this critical juncture of divorce, because I think we generally are optimistic and positive, and usually those are people that are good with spouses, to be honest. And we also are loyal and faithful creatures, which is a good thing. It's a very admirable thing, but that can easily get taken advantage of by a lot of other powers that be. And when it comes to athletes, I think that's your non-negotiable. You talk about whatever you need to do to help them, serve them, make their life better, make their experience better, make them the best possible athlete they can possibly be. That is where you say that I will work my absolute hardest. I will commit everything I can, mind, body, and spirit. When I'm working with other components like sports medicine, nutrition, sport coaches, you have to create clear boundaries of, at the end of the day, I have a job to do. And if there's time left in the day to do other people's jobs or help them do their job, that I will gladly volunteer and support you. But I'm going to put conditions and constraints on this to work with you. And a clear example of this is, let's just say travel. And let's say that you're working with a maybe non-football basketball sport. Everybody, and I mean everybody's got to chip in, right? We want to have a elite level experience for our teams. We want them to feel like they're playing for the Yankees every single game. Because if they feel confident that they're supported and they're treated like elite level athletes, the chances of playing like elite level athletes goes up. And I think that becomes the narrative. And one of the things that becomes so important between you and the rest of the staff is, how can I help? How can I support you? This isn't about me. This is about our athletes. Alternatively, it becomes in a high level, abundance of resources, football, basketball, at least in Power Five college sports or professional sports organizations, there are a lot of people, a lot. Clear indication of that is when you're traveling to an away game, how many people travel? I mean, there's hundreds going to a football game every weekend, just on the staff. And everyone's got a job to do, and everyone's got a role to play. And everyone's got to do what they're supposed to do to help that thing work, right? It's this big, big army going to a game, and all of us have to be on point with our particular job, and there's time variance associated with it. So the intensity of certain periods is going to be higher for some versus others. And one of the areas that I think is so critical is this notion that, oh, that person's not doing anything in that particular moment, so they therefore can help me right now. And I think there's a danger to that logic where potentially it might not be shared and that could easily lead to resentment or potentially a negative feeling. And I think there's probably people out there listening who's had a great longevity and able to put aside their ego and their pride and say, yeah, I just bite my tongue and I just keep doing it. And Sure. That's great. I think that's noble and I think that's awesome. And I've worked with a lot of coaches that I admire them, that they can detach. But then also too, of like, you can't bitch if you're not getting home at a certain period of time to see your family. You can't bitch and complain that you don't have time to do your job. You can't bitch and complain that you're like, I wish I had more support so I can do a better job for my athletes. Everything has a cost, whether it's time, emotional or physical energy, the expense of what your value is and doing a better job. And then the ironic part is, let's say that you've volunteered yourself out to everybody and then you get evaluated on your ability to get people stronger, faster, more resilient. And then it gets in this other dynamic of, well, they're not really doing their job. They're not very good at their job because you chose to prioritize other people and serving them. And I'll say this, that when you're trying to stay in a place for a long time and you're trying to be somewhere for the foreseeable future, versus this is where I'm from, this is my home, this is my dream school, my wife and my family love it here, or my spouse and my family love it here, or just, I want to be here. I believe in the mission. Then yes, you should try to position yourself and put yourself in a position where you're indispensable. Everyone will go to bat when there's transition and say, this is the guy or girl who needs to stay here. That's all great. But then the other end of it, if you're a person that's very, very driven and very, very focused on being as best as you possibly can, and I want to be strategic with where and when I allocate my time and energy, then you have to really prioritize, okay, where does the hierarchy fall? This is a absolute need versus this is a conditionally dependent situation. I'm going to put strict boundaries on it. Like, I'm only helping you this one time. You're on your own after this. Or just simply saying no. Or like, I call it athletic department ghosting, like just not responding to an email. Like, you know, as Tim Ferriss would say, there's no such thing as an email emergency, and the folks that need you will call you. I heard a really good line the other day and it was from Christian Bale, but he's like, if you don't like me, text me. And if you don't have my number, you don't know me well enough to text me or to not like me. And I think about that with athletic department. The only accessibility they have to you is via email. They're probably not a high priority, right? If you're working in an athletic department with hundreds of people and they only know you through via email, chances are you probably don't need to answer them or you don't need to respond to them. It's the ones that you're interacting with and interfacing with every single day are the ones that, one, deserve your time the most and deserve any expendable energy or whatever value you can bring. Insight there is where you really need to think about it. So if they don't really have any direct accessibility to you, that's for a reason. They're not really that important in what you need to do for your job preservation, as well as the focus that you should be spending, because that's energy diverting from someone else. And you can talk about the folks that you hire, the people that you work for, the athletes that you're serving, the sport coaches you're trying to support, the sports medicine that you're trying to build a relationship so they can one day help you do something that you want to do at a higher level. We're all in this together. But the other notion of like easily that can get taken advantage of. So generosity, reciprocity, all these components. So I'll leave this with that. Looking at this objectively, trying to say leverage is not a taboo term, looking at the bigger picture and saying, I want to be as good of a strength and conditioning coach as I could possibly be. I'm going to set some terms. I'm going to set some conditions. I'm going to put some constraints around where I'm working and say, this is the focus that I'm trying to do. I have the expectation that I don't want to shop myself around because that's messy and dirty, but I have to be willing and comfortable to ask for more money up front, especially if I made a small list of people to work there. All that stuff matters. All right, guys, I hope this was helpful and we'll see you guys next week. We'll talk about one more episode this season. We're going to talk about strategy, which I think will be a fun episode. And I hope you guys got a lot from the season.
Thank you guys for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed. If you like what you hear, please review, please rate, please share. It makes a big difference. As well as head over to phpodcast.com. Click the About section. At the bottom, you'll see a questionnaire. I need some ideas for season number 5. We have one more episode this season. We'll take a little break, and then we'll get cranked back up for season 5. Whatever you want to talk about, I'm open to suggestion. My instincts going over program design, maybe some periodization, or maybe a potential other area. I think often forgotten is my experience and knowledge with nutrition. So if that's something you're interested in hearing more about, please share your thoughts. Thank you, guys. I hope you guys are enjoying these, and we'll see you guys next week.